Good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. This morning was a first for me. In all the times that we have ever done a song, that it has been split up between the women do a part and the men do a part, I have never, ever, ever heard the men out sing the women until today. So I don't know what the difference was, but well done, men. Women, pick it up a little bit. You're getting past. So might be. had my hearing aid set to a certain frequency where I hear men's voices and not women's voices, which is what I'm accused of in my home all the time. the other thing is that we would rarely ever set two events, like a membership information session and an egg stuffing thing, at the same time. So I'm not really sure where that got jumbled up. But Haley, it was your bad? Okay, well, Haley said it was her bad, so I'll accept. I was going to apologize to you for trampling over your thing, but now I don't have to. So, good. So the other thing is, for those of you that were not here with us last week and didn't watch online, Jerry Lindsay made a passing comment by accident about a phone booth, to which I responded, well, what's a phone booth? Nobody knows what a phone booth is anymore. And so this morning, I was at Johnson Memorial Hospital before coming here, and I double-checked on the second and third floor where the last couple of phone booths in Johnson County were. They're not anymore. Just so everyone knows, so you can put your mind at ease, those are now hand sanitizing stations. Okay? So, that's that. So, all right. In 1965, Otis Redding, an R&B artist, released his third album. And on that third album, there was a song that became a huge hit for him. And then in 1967, singer Aretha Franklin took that song, rephrased it, redid it, and released it to what became her best-known hit ever. That song is known as one of the best or greatest R&B songs of history. In 1987, it was nominated into the Grammy Hall of Fame. And in 2021, Rolling Stone magazine named it number one on its 500 greatest songs of all time list. What's the name of the song? Respect. Respect. So one of the lines in that song says, all I'm asking for is a little respect. And I think most of us could agree that respect has become like a precious commodity in our society and in our world today. It seems like respect is being replaced with disrespect. Consideration is being replaced with lack of consideration. And common decency and common courtesy is being replaced with rage and rudeness. And so I think one of the things that, as much as we would agree that respect is a precious commodity in our society today, most of us would also agree that respect is a positive factor in relationships. That respect is much more healthy and much more beneficial in relationships than disrespect, lack of consideration, and rudeness and harshness. If we know that it's better, why do we struggle so much implementing respect into our daily lives and into our relationships with one another? When Timothy was leading the first century church in Ephesus, he was struggling with some challenging dynamics within the church. And the early church leader Paul wrote a letter to him and gave him some encouragement about how to navigate the challenging circumstances. In the midst of what he writes, the cornerstone of what he writes, the encouragement that he provides, hinges and focuses on respect. And so here's what he writes. He says, Do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Notice here that Paul doesn't tell Timothy not to rebuke an older man. tells him to rebuke him, to exhort him in a way. The word rebuke is it literally means to strike against. But he says, do not strike against an older man harshly, but exhort. The word for exhort can also mean to encourage and admonish gently, and treat him as if he was your father. The word rebuke here is being used in the sense of words rather than literally fists. So it's not like don't go and fight the older men physically. This is don't abuse them with words. Don't demean them. Don't belittle them. But treat them with the respect that they deserve. In the first century culture, the role of a father was to be highly respected. He's saying, make sure to treat him to treat every older man as if they were your father. Earlier, Timothy had been told, do not let anyone look down on you because you're young. Don't let your youth be a factor. And now he's telling him, even though you're young, you're going to have the opportunity and even the responsibility to challenge and encourage the older men, especially when they get off track in relationship with God and in relationship with one another. And he's telling him to do so gently and harshly. And then he goes on to say, treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters, with absolute purity. Now, some of you may have had the same rule in your household that we have in our household. And one of the rules that we have in our household is simply put, don't disrespect your mom. Now, it was very, very clear that my kids were not allowed to disrespect their mom. Now, there might have been times where she let them get away with it, but if dad was around, it was a different story. And dad would come literally unhinged if they disrespected their mom. Many, many times their actions were met with, your mom may let you disrespect her, but I will never let you disrespect her. And you either change your attitude or things are going to get really difficult for you really, really quick. So I want to treat them as a mother should be treated, and younger women as sisters. When our kids decided to attend the same college, which is a blessing and a curse, when they decided to attend the same college, one of the things that we said to them was, you need to look out for her, and you need to look out for him. They need to have each other's backs. David's three roommates that he has in the apartment, a couple of them were down a while back for something before Danielle went away to school. And I remember that night I opened the basement door and I yelled down into the basement. I just said, hey, boys. And they said, yeah. And I said, you know, I'm sending my daughter to school there next year, right? And they said, yeah, we know. And I said, you know, I expect her to have four big brothers and not just one, right? Yeah, we know. We got her. So they were supposed to look out for the younger as if she was their sister. When I was about 13 and my sister was 15, our family took a weekend trip to Turkey Run in Indiana here. And I don't remember a lot about the trip. And this particular memory, I may not even have completely accurate anymore. You know how things change over time and so I may not even have this completely accurate, but the way I remember this unfolding was while we were there and we were hanging out at the pool, there was one guy that was consistently bothering my sister. And she had asked him to stop bothering her, and he kind of persisted. And I remember at the pool going up to this individual and saying, hey, she said leave her alone. Now, I'm not the biggest guy at the age of 59, though I am bigger at 59 than I was a while back. And so you imagine what I was like at 13, because I have grown some since I was 13. It did not matter to me that this guy was older than me. It didn't matter that he was bigger than me. What mattered to me was looking out for my sister. And so we treat the younger women as sisters with absolute purity. Absolute purity here means that we treat people so well that respect, common decency, consideration can never be called into question, because we treat people so well that our respect, our common decency, our common courtesy, our consideration, and all of that is obvious. And no one can ever call it into question. Paul says, give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. The phrase proper recognition here has also been translated as honor, to give honor to those. And it means to fix value, to revere, to appreciate, value, and give due respect. He says, give proper recognition to those widows who are really in need. Which means there may have been some who weren't truly in need. The way the first century culture worked, it goes on to say, but if a widow has children or grandchildren, these should learn first of all to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family. The way it worked in the first century was if a family member was in need, the family responded and the family took care. There was no Social Security. There was no retirement plan. There was no IRA. There was none of that stuff that we have today. What there was the next generation taking care of the previous generation in their older age. And when the family struggled to do it, the church stepped in to do it. And the church partnered with the family, but the first line of care for them was a family. And it says a widow who has children and grandchildren should learn first of all. First of all, meaning that very possibly this wasn't happening in the church. The early church had a thing called a list of widows. And that list of widows were people who took on a special role in the church to care for one another when the family couldn't. And apparently the caring for widows had become a bit of a financial burden to the church. Very early on, the church established a system for taking care of widows when the family couldn't. And he says they should learn, first of all, to put their religion into practice, to put what they believe about God and what they believe about family and what they believe about relationship with one another into practice. Not just thoughts, not just the words that we say we believe, but actually put it into practice by caring for their own family. And so repaying their parents and grandparents. Repaying. So I used to joke. I used to joke with my kids, and every once in a while still do, that I would tell them that, you know, hey, when you were older, I changed your diaper, and so you'll change mine when I'm older. When you were younger, I changed your diaper, and so when I'm older, you'll change mine. You will repay me for changing your diaper. I used to tease some friends when I was primary caregiving for my dad. I would, because people would compliment me about how well I was taking care of my dad. And I would just look back at him and I go, make no mistake. I said, this is not completely altruistic. And they kind of look at me with a puzzled look. And I said, I have read and heard for a long time that the way you care for your aging parents is the way your kids will take care of you, because they're watching. And I said, so I'm only doing this to make sure my kids take good care of me when I get older. The way that I was able to take care of my mom and dad before they passed was an honor and a privilege. And in some ways, as a child, it's the least you can do for all that your parents and grandparents have done for you. And so we put it into practice to care for our own family, for this pleases God. It's just the right thing to do. It not only pleases God, it's just the right thing to do to take care of your own family. If a widow has children or grandchildren, they should learn first of all, to put their religion into practice by caring for their own family and so repaying their parents and grandparents. The widow who is really in need and left all alone puts her hope in God and continues night and day to pray and ask God for help. Again, typically, a woman who was widowed that had children, the children would take care of them. And a widow who didn't have children and had no one to take care of her, would oftentimes in this culture be left desolate and desperate. And sometimes they would have nowhere but God to turn. And so the phrase here, puts her hope in God, is someone who puts their hope in God on a continual and ongoing basis without wavering. That God can supply, God will take care of, and they pray and they ask God for help continually. But the widow who lives for pleasure is dead even while she lives. There are some commentators suggest that some of the widows had turned to a form of prostitution, and that others suggest they had turned to kind of like a lavish lifestyle, that they had leveraged their widowhood. I don't know if that's a word or not, but they'd leveraged their widowhood to take advantage of the generosity and the care and compassion of others so that they could live a lavish lifestyle. And it says that they are dead even while they are alive because their priorities are misaligned and they're not focused on what they should be focused on. And so there's some confusion about what that means. But the same word that's used there, or the same wording that's used there, is used in other place to describe spoiled children. And so it's someone who is basically spoiling, being spoiled or spoiling themselves. It says, give the people these instructions so that no one may be open to blame. So in other words, be clear. Give the people these instructions so that people can't talk bad about followers of Jesus not taking care of those that they need. Anyone who does not provide for their relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. In the Greco-Roman society, in the first century, in the ancient culture, the general standard practice was to take care of your family. Even people who did not consider God would take care of their own family. Because not just because it pleases God, but because it's just simply the right thing to do. And Paul tells Timothy here, make sure these people understand. Anyone who doesn't provide for their own relatives, and especially for their own household, has denied the faith. You're not pleasing God. It's not pleasing to God. And is worse than someone who doesn't and has never even considered God. And so if you're going to put your hope in God, if you're going to place your trust in Jesus, if you are going to be made right with God and you are going to live right with God, part of the responsibility that comes with that is to take care of your family, to take care of your own household, to make sure that the previous generation is cared for by the next generation. There are no pensions. There are no Social Security. There are no IRAs. There are no special savings accounts for retired, widowed people in the first century. And one commentator said that no act of goodness toward God will make up for the absence of goodness towards one's family. Let me say that again. No act of goodness toward God will